Welcome to the Paleo View. I'm Stacey Toth, best-selling author and co-creator of PaleoParents.com, where we focus on real-life solutions for families seeking health.
I'm Dr. Sarah Ballantyne, New York Times best-selling author and creator of ThePaleoMom.com. I'm passionate about improving scientific literacy around public health topics.
I like hashtags and bone broth.
And I'm just a super nerd.
Sarah, I am so sincerely sorry that I'm late. Not that that makes any difference to our listeners, but I have
he'll get everything on time.
Okay, really exciting news for you.
Okay, I'm ready.
First of all, while I was running around like a crazy woman trying to prepare to go cross country for the first time with my children ever, I caught a Pidgey. Now, I have been catching all of the Pidgeys and all of the rats for weeks for Finn. Do you know
why? Did you say you just caught your first ditto? Is that what you're trying to tell me?
That's what I'm telling you.
How have you not caught a ditto before today?
Okay, that doesn't make me, like, appreciate what happened. That only creates negativity.
I mean, it's, like, crazy exciting. And then you're like, wait, I want to see it again. And you can't make it do it again.
Yeah.
You want to see the reveal.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the reveal is really fun.
It was fun, and Finn wasn't there, but Finn was super excited that I finally caught him one. So that's exciting. Also exciting is I am actually on the West Coast right now by the magic of the internet and time warps.
Yes, yes, you are. And I'm assuming you are having a marvelous, marvelous time.
It's so awesome, the time that we're having.
You're about to say, I'm assuming so too.
Yep.
Maybe you will catch some more cool stuff there. I've heard LA is like the best place to catch Pokemon.
Yes, I have been informed that the West Coast is evidently the place to Pokemon by my son, who obsessively watches YouTube videos informing him of all of the awesome Pokemon Go things happening in California. And I...
So most of those YouTube videos are explicit.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. So, okay, let's not even talk about my children's YouTube habits. But what I will tell you is that my 8-year-old believes that we are going to California for the sole purpose of Pokemon going. And I'm like, that's not actually what we're going there for. So while I do think that there's probably awesome Pokemon in LA and San Francisco, there will be some time limits on how much Pokemon Go is going to be open, because I cannot deal with 10 days of Pokemon going. But yeah, so hopefully we're doing more than that. We're getting, you know, all kinds of fun stuff I talked about last week on the podcast. We're actually doing all that stuff this week, thanks to our listeners for the awesome ideas. So I will tell you all how it actually went next week.
Yeah, so we're actually recording actually a couple days early compared to normal, so that we can get this show on the books before your trip, because you will not have time to podcast while catching all the Pokemon in LA and San Francisco.
Yep.
/ doing some other cool fun things, but mostly catching Pokemon.
Yeah. Carting podcast equipment with us across the coast didn't seem like a great idea.
I mean, it's bad enough when you're catching Pokemon that you have to have extra battery packs, and then, you know, like, it's a lot of walking, so you have to have, like, water, and there's a lot of, you know, Pokemoning already.
It's a thing.
It's a lot of it's a lot of carrying stuff. There was actually a study just released, I think, a couple of days ago that showed that sort of avid Pokemon Go players are 43% or something like that more likely to hit 10,000 steps a day compared to non-Pokemon Go players.
Nice.
Which I thought was a super validation of my incredibly immature and inexplicable addiction to Pokemon Go.
I like that you just found a way to scientifically validate our ridiculous addiction.
It really is. It's quite embarrassing. So if I'm like catching a Pokemon and someone catches me, sees, and I'm just like, oh, it's for my kids.
Totally. It's totally for my kids.
My kids play now, but it's really not for them. It's really, yeah. I've only got like five more to go to complete my Pokedex, and I'm until they release more Gen 2s. And it's amazing how the collector's fanaticism is triggered by these like random digital creatures. It's really,
you gotta
really,
catch
no,
them
it's
all.
Embarrassing.
All right. We gotta
catch them all.
So
I know that was, I was not anticipating a Pokemon intro to this episode. That was not where I thought we were going to go.
You know what you need when you're getting your 10,000 steps in and, you know, all that Pokemoning?
Some starchy carbs.
See what I did there?
Oh, that was good. That was good. You're right. You've redeemed yourself as Segway Queen this week. Good.
I'm so glad. Good. I'm living up to your expectations.
So what kind of starchy carbs, Stacey? I say as though I don't know what we're about to talk about.
So I think that it would be a really good idea for us to address potatoes or not potatoes on the paleo.
Dun, dun, right? Doesn't it? I needed some kind of.
Yeah.
Potatoes are
potatoes, tomatoes.
Let's call
tomatoes.
The thing off. Yeah, that's it.
You like potato and I like potato. You like tomato and I like tomato. Potato, potato, tomato, tomato. Let's call the whole thing off.
Potatoes are really surprisingly contentious topic still within the paleo community.
I can't believe it because I feel like it was years ago. It had to have been at least 4 years ago when Chris Kresser laid down the law informing people that potatoes actually had nutritional value because
it was 2011.
I see. You knew that. That's insane. Yeah. First of all, but and then there was like this whole snowball of potato-ness between the Perfect Health Diet coming out. And then eventually it was added by Whole30 as an official approved Whole30 food. And
even that was like 2 years ago, I think, or more.
And yet there are still so many questions about potatoes. And in particular,
it's not even just questions, though. It's like potato anger.
Well, there's still, I think, that low-carb paleo camp from the people who find out about paleo from Lauren Cordain going on Dr. Oz or whatever, right? So it's like, I guess it's not to say that because potatoes are paleo that you have to eat them. Tomatoes are paleo and Sarah and I don't eat them. This is like a basic analogy that we use at least once a month here on the Paleo View. But I do think that it would be good to talk about what and why some potatoes are good for some people and some potatoes are not, and what the difference is and if we eat them and why, and let's just tackle it once and for all so that we can just point people to the answers instead of having to explain every time we take a picture or I take a picture of stew and there's potato in it and people are like, oh my God, is that potatoes? Like, yep.
They do. That really is. That's even the emojis being used within that comment. That's
interrobang.
The tone of voice that they're implying. Yeah.
Interrobang, capital letters, emojis.
Yes. The little like the scream emoji, that one. It's always that one. it's true. No. So one of the things that I'm doing in Paleo Principles is I'm separating out the sort of, I'm separating up paleo yes foods, paleo no foods, and this fairly large collection of foods, some of which are traditionally branded as paleo, like potatoes and tomatoes, and some of which are traditionally not branded as paleo, like white rice. And I'm separating those out into their own part to talk about these foods in which there's pros and cons, and they may work for some people and they might not work for some other people, or foods in which the science really isn't conclusive. So I'm kind of pulling those foods out into their own little section. So it'll almost look like, you know, I start with what is included on paleo and why those foods are health promoting, nutrient dense foods. And then like really what are the things that are eliminated? And then this entire world in between where it's not cut and dry. And then also explain, you know, how do you figure out for yourself whether or not this food works for you? And one of the topics that I had to go into a lot of detail was potatoes, and sort of separate from other nightshades, because potatoes have sort of been, I think, demonized over the years as being empty calories and being, you know, pure sugar. And they have this this extra reputation for basic, you know, being the same as white bread, right? Like that's kind of, you know, I remember my step aunt going on a no white diet. And her diet was just, I don't eat anything that's white. So it's like no white sugar, no white flour, no white bread, no potatoes, no whipped cream, I guess. I don't know what other, no radishes,
I'm not
maybe?
Going on
I don't
that
know.
Diet, just for the record. I was okay with it until the whipped cream. And then I was out.
I mean, we all have our currency. And I'm a big fan of finding your currency. So by which I mean, if... This is one thing that comes up a lot with AIP is people will say, well, I could do AIP, but I can't give up coffee, or I could do AIP, but I can't give up chocolate. And I just say, okay, if that's your currency, then you roll with that. So you do all of the other amazing good choices and you have this one thing left that makes everything else possible. You can tackle that one thing later. You can tackle that, you know, is coffee holding you back from healing in a month or 2 months. But like right now, if that's what's going to let you do everything else, then do it. That's better than not doing anything. So Stacey, if whipped cream's your currency, I say there's worse currencies. I'm just saying.
I have no shame. Like I came to this realization that homemade whipped cream is just a different form of butter. And I'm okay admitting that that's my currency. Just saying. Moving right along, potatoes.
I'm a little bit jealous of your like psh, thing. What's that called?
It's called an ISI psh, psh, psh thing. Cream whipper. Yeah, but it's
so that's why I didn't.
It's a psh, 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 psh thing.
Yeah,
it's psh, that's psh, definitely its official name.
Yeah. But we should just do a whole show on whipped cream in the future. So, you know, as Chris Kresser very rightly pointed out to the entire paleo community, potatoes are not empty calories. They are very comparable in nutrition to other root vegetables that have good reputations within paleo, like sweet potato, like beets, like cassava, or green plantain's a fruit, but you know, these very mineral rich, potassium rich foods. So for example, a sort of medium baked potato has about a quarter of our recommended daily intake of potassium, comparable amounts, so 28% of the RDA vitamin C. So we don't think of potatoes as being a really great source of vitamin C, but they are. 27% of vitamin B6, which is really important for methylation and metabolism. 19% of our RDA of magnesium, of manganese, 12% of magnesium, 12% of some other really important B vitamins like vitamin B3, which is really important for lipid peroxidation, so dealing with oxidized fats and really, really important for metabolism. 12% of folate, so vitamin B9, which is also really important for metabolism, methylation, detoxification. 12% of phosphorus, 10% of iron and copper, and like smaller amounts, but substantial of vitamin K, calcium, vitamin B1, vitamin B2, vitamin B5, and zinc. Like, it's, when you look at 25%, like, to, you know, a quarter to a third of the RDA of a collection of nutrients, there's not that many foods that can boast that in 160 calories. Like, that's a pretty impressive amount of nutrition. So you can hardly call potatoes an empty calorie when it contains that much. Now, it is true that potatoes do have a high glycemic index and a high glycemic load. But really interestingly, potato glycemic responses are very contextual. So you can greatly lower the glycemic response to a potato by adding acid to it. So a little bit of vinegar or some salsa, right, which would be a perfectly normal potato topping. You can lower the glycemic index by serving it with fat, which I feel is the appropriate way to eat a potato. You can lower the glycemic response by including it as part of a meal. So having it with more fiber, like having a salad on the side as well. And you can also lower the glycemic response by cooking it, boiling it, for example, and then cooling it, because potatoes are fairly high in resistant starch, which we talked about a few podcasts ago. And what happens is you break apart the RS1 and then you form RS2 as the potato cools. So then all of a sudden you've turned some of what was going to be a digestible starch that was going to impact your blood sugar into a resistant starch that's just going to feed your gut bacteria by cooling it. And you can reduce the glycemic response to a potato nearly by half simply by, you know, using a few, layering these tricks. So it's, you know, not maybe an amazing food to eat in copious quantities by itself, but as one serving as part of a meal, the, you know, glycemic response argument starts to fall apart. But where I think potatoes belong in this not cut and dry area is the fact that they're a nightshade and the fact that they contain glycoalkaloids. And that is why they're not included as part of the autoimmune protocol. And that is to me, one of the biggest areas of concerns in terms of whether or not a potato is a health promoting food. So we've got great nutrition. We've got moderately, moderate burning starchy carbs. And then we've got glycoalkaloids and potatoes. Some varieties of potatoes can be extremely high in glycoalkaloids and some are very, very low. Does it make sense to kind of go through some of the varieties?
So I think the thing that would be helpful is if we talked about potatoes in two different groups, because I think colloquially, the paleo community in general considers regular potatoes different from sweet potatoes, but there are so many more nuances, between the different types of potatoes or root vegetables that are sometimes grouped in with potatoes like yams, that I think that it would be helpful. And I think, you know, from my perspective, what I would just encourage people to do, because you're going to get geeky and you're going to talk about a lot of science, is that vegetables look different for a reason. Like, if you're in the vegetable aisle and you've got your kid shopping with you, what I encourage everybody to do is try different things and explore them, because what you're going to probably talk about are how very different a purple Japanese sweet potato is from an American orange sweet potato in both flavor and vitamin content. That's why it's a different color. And the same is true of regular potatoes. Like, a purple potato is actually different from a white russet potato. So it's not to say that they're, you know, like, entirely different. Obviously, they're all root vegetables. They're all called potato for a reason. But, you know, when when we go to the store, we intentionally try to choose something different or a variety of things. And that's one of the reasons that we don't always get our produce from Costco, even though it is like the most affordable, easy way to get organic vegetables, because they always have the exact same type, right? So we love to go to Asian supermarkets, or we'll go to like a Trader Joe's, or we'll go to a Wegmans. Like, we don't go to the same place every week, and that enables us to try different things. And I think that that's what I would tell people or encourage people to take away from the show, is that, you know, we're going to talk about some of the things that might not work for you and why. But if those don't apply to you, or all the other options that are still available to you, definitely get out there and explore, because you might find that you like the flavor of a certain thing in a stew versus, you know, baked on the side of your bunless burger or whatever. So that's my spiel, and I'm sticking to it.
Well, I think you brought up a really important point, which is to differentiate between potatoes and other root vegetables that look like potatoes, or like sweet potatoes that have sweet potato in the name, because they actually come from completely different taxonomy orders. So it's not even that they're a different family. They're even like one higher than that. It's a different order of vegetable. And what they have in common is that they're a starchy tuberous root. So they're the plant uses it to store energy underneath the ground. And the reason why a sweet potato is called a potato is because whoever saw sweet potatoes thought they looked the same but tasted sweeter. Like, it's a really sort of simplistic, like, oh, this looks the same. But before really taxonomy was and sort of differentiating different types of plants into groups, or different types of life into groups, was a thing. Potatoes, the root that is contentious within the paleo community, because sweet potatoes have always been considered paleo, as have like bonito root, which is a type of sort of sweet potato, or yam, which is related, but again, a sort of a different starchy tuber. Potatoes come from the Solanum genus. So their Latin name is Solanum tuberosum, which I'm probably not pronouncing correctly. And they're part of the nightshade order. So they're actually more closely related to tomatoes and bell peppers and chilies and nicotine than they, you know, tobacco, than they are to sweet potatoes. So they're actually quite a different family. And one of the things that this entire family of fruits and tubers have in common is glycoalkaloids. Glycoalkaloids are a type of saponin, which is, it's like, it acts like a detergent. So it's a chemical inside plants that make oil and water mix. And there's certain types of saponins in plants that are pretty harmless when it comes to us eating. And then there's others that can actually really damage the cells that line our small intestine, and definitely are not good. And glycoalkaloids, especially the glycoalkaloids in potatoes, you know, they are toxic. They're known to be toxic. And there have been cases of poisoning and death from high intake of glycoalkaloids from potatoes. So, you know, scientific research has established that an intake of 3 to 6 milligrams of glycoalkaloids per kilogram body weight. So think of a, you know, 50 kilo person, you're talking 150 milligrams of glycoalkaloids can be a potentially lethal dose. And about a third of that, so like 1 to 3 milligrams of glycoalkaloids, is considered a toxic dose. And the symptoms are like, it causes a leaky gut, so it causes intestinal permeability. And typically, you know, in the toxic dose range, severe diarrhea, weight loss, and, as already mentioned, death. And so one of the things is understanding.
At some point, someone might think that their obsession with mashed potatoes would be worth that. I mean, I'm just kidding. But
I mean, there are definitely people. But I mean, it's important to sort of understand that where death happens is either unusually high glycoalkaloid content potatoes, so green potatoes. So we know that's what makes a green potato green, and that's why we're not supposed to eat green potatoes. So if you see green when you cut into a potato, that's bad. Don't eat it. Also really high intake. Like
where I was going with it is more, I hear often that children eat a lot of potatoes, and especially if you're talking about, pre real foods diet and getting a lot of potato from, like frozen French fries or things like that. Like it's a reason to encourage your children to try a variety of other vegetables, because their bodies are so small that their tolerance for that is going to be lower.
I think that's a really good point is, potatoes have become the root vegetable, right? As opposed to cycling through potatoes and sweet potatoes and jicama and beets and parsnips and cassava, right? And exploring all of these different root vegetables that are generally pretty easy to find now in most grocery stores. At least I'm finding them in, everywhere from like Kroger to Whole Foods to Sprouts locally. But there are some scientists who believe that the increase in intake of potatoes in Western countries is one of the main contributors to the rise in chronic illness. So there are some people who believe that it is the glycoalkaloids, especially solanine and catechin in potatoes, that are causing inflammation and are, leading to obesity, diabetes, cardiovascular disease, autoimmune disease, that are basically, once we ramp up inflammation, we're creating an environment where these chronic illnesses can develop and progress. I think it's a lot more complicated than that. I think there's a lot of foods in Western diets that are harmful and a complete lack of foods that are actually nutrient dense and supply our bodies with the resources that they need to be healthy. But I think it's important to keep in mind that potatoes as a nutrient dense tuber also have this chemical in them that can cause inflammation. They are highly inflammatory. So they damage the gut, they enter the body intact, and they stimulate the immune system. And that's why these chemicals, these glycoalkaloids, are so bad. So there is an upper limit of safety established for glycoalkaloids in potatoes, and potatoes are tested before being sold in a grocery store. And the upper limit of safety is 20 milligrams per 100 gram of potatoes. So and think of 100 gram of potato is about one smallish to mediumish potato. So you're talking about probably 1/50th, you'd have to eat something like 10 to 50 potatoes, depending on the variety of potatoes. If you were eating russet potatoes, which are fairly low in glycoalkaloids, you'd have to eat about 50 pounds of them to actually hit a toxic dose of glycoalkaloids. So when you look at the potatoes that are available in most grocery stores, red potatoes only have about a milligram per 100 grams. So that's 1/20th of what the upper limit for safety is. White potatoes have 0.6 milligrams per 100 grams. Russet potatoes are about the same. So there's Lenape potatoes, which are right at the top. They're at right about 20 milligrams per 100 grams. When you compare potatoes grown in other countries, so these are potentially more older cultivars. But if you look at some, there was a great study that looked at compared American potatoes with Pakistani potatoes. I don't know why. But, some of their varieties of potatoes contain 4,000 times more glycoalkaloids per 100 grams compared to the potatoes that we're consuming. It's a very different food. So the potatoes that we're used to that we can get in grocery stores tend to be quite low on the glycoalkaloid scale. And it's really important to know that between 30 and 80% of solanine and up to 98% of total glycoalkaloid content is concentrated in the peel and the area just under the peel. So peeling potatoes can get rid of most of the glycoalkaloids in a potato. And there's certain varieties that are like more exaggerated. So russets are a great example of a potato where most of the glycoalkaloids are in the peel. So are dark red Norland potatoes. And then there's other ones like Snowden potatoes where there's more glycoalkaloids in the flesh. So it's still more concentrated in the peels, but now you're talking about like half of it's in the peel, or maybe, you know, 60, 70% is in the peel, but there's still a fairly substantial amount still in the flesh of the potato. So, you know, there's data and tables and scientific references on my website about potatoes, and we can link to that in the show notes. So if people want to really get geeky about what varieties they're going to try, I would say especially if any of our EIP listeners are thinking they want to give potatoes a try, definitely research the variety of potato and pick one that's low in glycoalkaloid as a first step. Peel it. Also, really interestingly, there's some evidence that cooking potatoes in the microwave can reduce the glycoalkaloid content more than boiling or other cooking methods, which is kind of cool because I like the baked potato button. It's kind of my fave.
And for those listeners who are wondering, microwave, we do have an entire podcast dedicated to that. I'm sure you can just search microwave, but we'll also have a link in the show notes.
Yeah, I also have a very epic, long, sciencey, nerdy, full of scientific references post on my website about why microwaves are actually perfectly safe to use. You know, one of the things that we like to do on this show is actually talk about real science. And, you know, for me, it's very, very important to be able to back up everything that I say with quality scientific studies and not continue on into that realm of speculation and pseudoscience. So for example, if we're talking about potatoes right now, I think it's really important to look at these pros and cons. So pros, nutrient-dense tuber, you know, great whole food source of resistant starch. Cons may have these compounds in it that can be inflammatory. And there are people who report symptoms at quite a small amount of glycoalkaloids per potato. So like 3 to 10 milligrams, which is on par with a lot of the varieties that we can get in stores or in farmers markets. You know, there are people who have issues with that. And I think it's especially important for anyone with gut pathologies, which, you know, any gastrointestinal symptoms on a regular basis, any kind of autoimmune disease, to think carefully about the pros and cons of potatoes, because it's got some great nutrition to give to our body, but compounds that can irritate the gut and stimulate the immune system. And if you've got an immune system that's already overactive, that's not going to do you any favors, which is why potatoes are not included on the autoimmune protocol. But their arguments for why they aren't paleo, those don't make sense anymore. To just say, you know, they're empty calories, we're just going to lump them in the same category as, you know, sugar, that's categorically false.
I want to highlight one of the things that you said, which is really important. I love that you have a chart about different kinds of potatoes, because I didn't know that and I'm going to check it out. But for me, even though it's a nightshade, I actually am able to consume potatoes without an inflammatory response if I don't eat the peel. So I think, you know, as people, like you said, who maybe are on AIP and they want to try a potato, knowing the nuances of what you just explained is important. And so I just wanted to highlight to people, and I'm going to check out that list just to see, because I've done, you know, my own kind of N equals one experiments, and it'll be interesting to cross-reference with what you've posted. But it's the whole thing, everything about paleo is really about what works for you and what makes you feel good. So it's always good to have base knowledge and information to make informed decisions about what to try, or to kind of help yourself understand what is or isn't working. But I think this idea that, you know, things either categorically do or don't work for people in a vacuum without actually applying it to individual requirements it's just silly. And if you have a guru that you're listening to that tells you this one thing absolutely never works for anybody, or this one thing absolutely always works for everybody, I would question like where they got that information and what science they're using to back it up. And you know, it's just, I don't know, I'm on a whole bunch of soapboxes, and then I just get to like three quarters of the way through and I'm like, yeah, that's what I have to say about that.
Well, I think that it's very important to, and I think it's something that we try to do on the show, and we both try to do with our websites and social media, is give people the information that they need to make an informed decision. Because there, you know, with potatoes as an example, there are great pros and there are potential cons, and there are very likely people who are more sensitive and people who are more resilient. And you're not necessarily going to know what you are until you try it, although, you know, I would say somebody who's struggling to mitigate autoimmune disease with the autoimmune protocol, that maybe trying it should not be a top priority given its potential to cause a lot of inflammation. But it's actually really common in the autoimmune protocol, or the autoimmune community, of people who are doing reintroductions after the autoimmune protocol, is to find that potatoes work and other nightshades don't. And part of the reason is because of exactly what you're saying, like, peeling the potato can get rid of such a huge percentage of the glycoalkaloids. The other part is that, I mean, solanine is found in quite a few, and caycinine is found in quite a few, but a lot of people will have more issues with tomatine, which is found in tomatoes, compared to solanine and caycinine, which are the main glycoalkaloids found in potatoes. So there's a bit of a difference in terms of exactly how these different glycoalkaloids work in our body, exactly how easily they get across our gut barriers, exactly what they do to our gut barriers as they cross, and how much they stimulate the immune system. So, for example, alpha tomatine in tomatoes has actually been investigated for use in vaccines as an adjuvant. So it's, you know, a vaccine is a dead or inert virus that can't reproduce or is completely dead. And like some kind of chemicals that are going to ramp up your immune system so that you develop immunity against that vaccine, or against whatever that vaccine is against. So if you don't have the adjuvant, you can't get enough of an immune response to actually develop immunity. So, you know, this compound in tomatoes, you know, we think of tomatoes as such a health promoting food because they do have a really compelling amount of nutrition, including some really cool phytochemicals. But they're one of the most inflammatory foods because of the alpha tomatine content. So again, you know, they fall in under this same umbrella of nightshades that potatoes do, of a food that has some great pros and has some great cons. And you really need to look at your nutrients. Insufficiency. Are you getting the nutrients that you need? Because that'll influence how your body responds to something, how stressed you are, how well you're sleeping, how active you are, whether or not you have diagnosed diseases, and how well managed those diseases are. All of those things are going to affect how an individual is going to respond to a food, on top of genetic susceptibilities. So I think it's really important to understand that when we say the fundamental principle of paleo is figuring out what works for you, it means figuring out what works for you with this foundation of understanding what the pros and cons are of different foods and what are the factors that influence whether or not a food is going to work for you and how to know if that food's going to work for you. So really understanding how to listen to our own bodies, how to keep food journals, what types of symptoms to look for. And we've talked about all of this stuff on the show before, but I think it's really important to, you know, understand that for a lot of foods, like the whole part in that's coming up in Paleo Principles, there's some great pros and there's some great cons. And all that I think a responsible educator can do with that is give you that list of pros and cons and then let you make the decision and let you experiment and figure out if it's going to work for you rather than throwing this on a banned, no, it's not paleo list, or, well, it's not paleo and now it's paleo, or it's, you know, it was paleo, it was perfect health diet, now it's Whole 30. I think that we get so wrapped up in the rules and the check boxes, right? This is paleo, this is not paleo. And we forget to take a step back and actually look at what scientific research can tell us about the properties of that food and how that food impacts human health, and then make an educated choice for ourselves. So I'm really trying to, with Paleo Principles, get away from these rules and get back to the basics of understanding food. I see you got me on a soapbox.
I'm so down. It's a soapbox menagerie.
is it a menagerie?
I don't know. Couldn't you just like I let that
think there
be
was
awesome
not
without questioning it?
Just I think there was a shortage of animals to call it a menagerie.
Well, now you're getting critical.
I mean, so, I appreciated the French-derived word. I mean, that was cool.
So in the case that someone identifies that potatoes do work for them, i.e. they're not on the autoimmune protocol or they've reintroduced it, what I'm hearing from the science is that, you know, making sure that you're eating it as part of a balanced diet, and by that I mean not only potatoes, and helping it balance your blood sugar with, you know, fat, protein, fiber from other sources, is the recommendation. Am I simplifying that correctly?
Yeah, I think so. I think that there's not a compelling reason to eat the peel. I think that probably peeling potatoes, I mean, you can cook, right? You can bake a potato in the peel and then just eat the yummy part in the inside. I think that when you look at the glycoalkaloid content in the peel versus the nutrients aren't necessarily concentrated in the peel, but the glycoalkaloids are, I think you can make a really good argument for it's a good thing to peel. But I think that as part of a whole meal, if it's not causing GI symptoms, if it's not causing noticeable increases in inflammation, potatoes have a lot of great nutrition to offer us, including, you know, potassium is something that a lot of us still end up deficient in. Vitamin C is a very, very common deficiency. We think of it as, you know, being so easy to get from fruit, but it actually is a surprisingly common deficiency because we burn through it so much in our modern chronic stress lives. You know, potatoes have some really amazing nutrition offers. We cannot call them empty calories. They compete, you know, very, very well with other root vegetables in terms of their nutritional value. And they're darn tasty.
So on the opposite end of the spectrum, if someone were on AIP, and I know that you've got this and I've got this in other places, but just entertain me on this podcast for this purpose. Let's run through a list of,
delicious root vegetable options.
Yep. Other root vegetables that we substitute when we're following a recipe, let's say, that has potatoes.
So I love to substitute green plantain for potato, especially in like soups, stews. There's pretty classic in chowder to get the creaminess from a grated potato, but you can do that with a grated green plantain. But white sweet potatoes or purple sweet potatoes kind of change the color, but the chemistry works really well because they tend to be a starchier sweet potato. But white or purple, sort of like the Japanese or the purple sweet potatoes, they tend to be not quite as sweet and a denser starch. So they work as really great substitutes as well. And then when it comes to just, you know, roasting or oven fries or like the more typical way I think that we eat potatoes, sweet potatoes, green plantains, parsnips are amazing. Squash is amazing. Bonnetta root, if you can find it around here, I get it seasonally. It's one of the most tasty root vegetables I've ever had. Russ Crandall told me about it. So I was like, you know,
good if Russ likes it.
Right? Anything that I was like, Russ, I don't know how to make this. He's like, just see the website, you know, see the recipe on my site. I'm like, you've already posted a recipe for bonnetta? He has. Cassava, delightful. It does have to be typically boiled before you do anything else with it, but it's a little bit more high maintenance for cooking, but it's an amazingly delicious root vegetable. Less starchy, but you know, still root vegetables, something like beets or carrots. There's taro root, lotus root.
My favorites are rutabaga and parsnip and
turnips.
So like we have a not baked potato recipe on our soup recipe on our blog, and it actually uses rutabaga and turnips. So I think that we've given you a lot of options.
But even if you are somebody for whom potatoes works well, here's a great option of things to mix it up.
Yep.
Because it really is important to not get in a rut with the same foods over and over again.
Yeah. And I will say that I really love veggie mash. Like that's one of my favorite foods. And even though I can do potatoes without the skin, we rarely do mashed potatoes. Like that's a special, if we do it, it's like Thanksgiving or Christmas.
What's your normal? Like what's your.
So we normally do turnip and parsnip, or we'll do celeriac with rutabaga. And my favorite is carrot. And our carrot mash recipe is actually on the blog and in Beyond Bacon. It's like anybody who's had it tells us it's amazing. I remember we served it to Haley from Primal Palate and she immediately like went home and made it herself. So I just think that exploring with different root veggies to make mashes, it brings like a nuance and excitement that you don't get with potatoes. But if you're looking for like a classic mashed potatoes and gravy, I think the closest that you're going to get to that is like a collie mash. And you know, everybody has collie mash recipes, but I just think that it's fun to explore and find different flavors, but it's also really good for you to have that nutrient variety in your diet. And like you said, Sarah, when things are in season, it's, you know, it's easy to try new things because if you just go with whatever's in season, then you'll constantly be changing it up. So hopefully we've given people all the information that they could possibly need about potatoes.
Did we say, are potatoes paleo? Yes or no? Did we answer that question?
Do we need to? Hey, no, Sarah.
We don't.
Sarah, are potatoes paleo?
Kinda.
I always say to people, like, is the internet paleo? Like, it's such a weird question that I feel like people kind of hung up on.
Is indoor plumbing paleo?
Yeah.
Hot showers. This is my new house. Like, when in human history have we had hot showers before? Never. Am I giving them up? Absolutely not. It's just
a thought. Awesome. Well, I'm going to jump off so that I can finish packing so that I can be in California when this airs. And when I speak to you next, I look forward to telling you how awesome everything was.
I am looking forward to hearing what Pokemon you caught.
My gosh.
Slash how the Batmobile was.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to like remove the app from my phone or something. It's gonna be a thing.
It's gonna be amazing. You're gonna love it. You're gonna think back to, and you have like the Pokemon have the little location stamp of where you got them.
Mm-hmm. My favorite Pokemon, and we're completely ridiculous about this whole thing, but my favorite Pokemon is the Snorlax that I caught in Universal when we were on vacation together as a family. Because every time I see that Pokemon, I think about when we were on vacation. So you're right. I probably will catch something cool and it'll remind me of, you know, our trip in California. But I also don't want to see my kid's face buried in a phone the entire week.
I think a little structure will solve that problem. Exactly. Well, there's a balance of Pokemon slash actual experiences interacting with the real world that could happen.
Making eye contact with loved ones, that whole thing.
I mean, optional, but whatever. Well, have a great trip. Thanks for hopping on and recording this show with me. So we have something for the listeners while you're gallivanting.
Of course.
We will be back next week, guys. So tune in and thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to The Paleo View. If you enjoyed the show, please take a moment to rate us on iTunes. You can also support us by shopping for our favorite paleo products on the sidebars of our individual websites or by donating through PayPal.
Talk.
I just want your volume to be higher than my volume. It's like a volume snob. Like, I'm going to turn you down now.
I don't know, like, who uses this, but every time I put it back on my head, it's, like, always turned all the way up again.
So it's whoever the deafest person is in your house.
Yeah, I think we all know that that would be our podcast producer who went to entirely too many black metal concerts.
So I am going to make the suggestion right now that somewhere in the show that like I say potato, you say potato, let's call the whole thing off song, that gets inserted somewhere. I say potato, you say potato, let's call the whole thing off. That one gets inserted. Not me singing it.
No, it's too late. You already sung it.
Potato. Potato, tomato, tomato. Come on. It's epic.
Let's call the whole thing off. So I can hear whatever that is on your end. And I had something happening in my room as well, so I didn't unmute. Sorry, Matt. It was Matt coming in.
Oh, okay. On my end, it was a cat walking around with a toy in her mouth. And therefore, just yowling. Because she's walking around probably with a toy the same size as her head. In her mouth.